The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from the Radio X studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now here's your host, Stone Payton.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and joining me in the studio is Todd Schnick. What's happening, Todd?
My big event for the week is I'm hosting a tweet-up tomorrow night at the restaurant of one of my clients, Fuego Mundo. I think it's safe to assume we're going to violate fire code because we have, as of this morning, we have 140 RSVPs. And by the way, I'm sure our guests know that they would love to have them join us tomorrow night. That I'll give you information on that. But that's going to be a great event. We got some great people coming. We got a little surprise gift offering that we're doing.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. So that's going to be exciting. Plus, there's going to be random free meals given out to attendees. So that's going to be
cool.
A lot of fun. So tomorrow night, 6 o'clock at Fuego Mundo. It's in Sandy Springs, just on Roswell Road, just south of 285. So that's going to be my next 24 hours is getting everything ordered together for that.
All right. Well, sounds like fun. Well, we have a marvelous show for you this morning. First up, we are going to have an opportunity to speak with Jenny Schmidt. She's the founder of CloudSpark, which is a company that provides new and emerging companies with smart, strategic public relations, communications, and social media services. We've got a ton of questions to ask her. Please join me in welcoming her to the show. Welcome to the show, Jenny.
Good morning. Thank you.
We are delighted to have you. So give us a little overview. Tell us what CloudSpark's all about and what prompted you to get this company started.
CloudSpark is really a vision of something I've had since really my undergraduate days. I always wanted to own my own business and be my own boss. And we're really focused on strategic communication and social media services for new and emerging companies. And a lot of our clients that come to us say, what do we do now? What do we do next? And we kind of specialize in filling that. We're professional unstuckers in some way. You know, we help companies take that next step, find the next step, take it and execute it well, and be on their way to success. So I thoroughly enjoy, you know, with my small team that I've got, we thoroughly enjoy working with companies that are at that juncture.
You know, if she hasn't trademarked that phrase, or even if she has, we ought to steal
it. I've already written
it. Is that
it down.
Not perfect for the High Velocity website?
Professional
what do we do now? What do we do next?
Unstuckers. I like it.
Professional unstuckers.
Hey, Jenny, I think you hit on a point there that I've noticed when I've gotten to market is that I think companies now recognize they need to be at least exploring that space, but they don't know what to do next. And so, how do you begin to professionally unstuck them?
That's a great question, and it's intellectual property. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, okay.
Next
question.
So. I'm just kidding, Todd. No, I think the first step is to look at how you got where you are. And a lot of times, small companies, especially, or even emerging brands, they think they needed to go somewhere. They got some counsel or they had some internal folks saying, this is where we're going. But it suddenly doesn't match up with their audience, or it doesn't match up. They're not seeing the sales come in, or they're not seeing the response to whatever it happens to be, an event, a product, a brand, a service. And so the first step we really do is we literally scrape all the way back. It's kind of like removing layers of paint and saying, what do you have that's of value? And who does that resonate well with? Okay, so we've got your value, we've got who it might resonate with. And when people tell me their audience is everybody, I say, no, it's not. Everybody could use this product. Actually, no, that's not true. You've definitely got to help folks kind of narrow in to say, it'd be great if everybody bought my product, but who would be the first people that would be most likely to take on that product? So we go back to what's the value, who's the audience, and then really we take them forward into what's the best way to reach them. And that's usually how you start the unstucking process.
Do you find that they more and more are asking you about the role of social media and whatever strategy they should implement, or is that something you're having to bring up, or...
Actually, we're getting that question. That's the phone call we're getting now is, I need a Facebook fan page. And the first question I say is, why? You know,
right.
What makes you think that's what you need? But social media is on everybody's mind. I think you see it in the Wall Street Journal. You see CNN using live tweets, you know, which are small messages in Twitter. I mean, you're seeing it almost become pervasive. And so there's no way to really avoid the conversation of, what are we doing in social media?
you know, back to your counsel to them to not try to be everything to everyone. I'm sure that's a little bit counterintuitive for some of them to get them focused in. But then I'm trying to balance that with the idea that social media, one of the things that it does, is it lets you open things up and reach the entire world. How do you integrate those two concepts, being able to get to the entire world and trying to focus in on people? I mean, how do you navigate those kinds of waters?
Well, you stay focused. And you focus on what works or what kind of matches up, A, to your personality and as a company, and B, where your audience is. One of the biggest mistakes that folks make is they chase technology or they chase the latest marketing channel, you know, to put it in business speak. You know, they're chasing the latest thing. Chase your customers. And if your customers are out there and they're on Twitter, that's great. If they're on Facebook, that's great. If they're young and they're under 15 and they're interested in music, then MySpace might be the place to go. If you have a restaurant, you know, as a client, perhaps focusing in on the Yelp community, which is a kind of an e-pinion, a place where people go out and rate different food and entertainment venues. So you've got to know the landscape, but you really need to chase your customers and not the technology.
That sounds like
I'm learning all kinds of new cool words that I'm going to steal. E-pinion, I like that.
E-pinion and Yelp and.
Well, I'm familiar with Yelp, but I've never heard the term e-pinion. I like
e-pinion.
That.
Well, and you're familiar with the 15 and under crowd too, right?
Absolutely. Yes. 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 My partner fits into that category.
So, talk to us a little bit about public relations, PR. You know, that to me is also something that always comes up in the conversation, the marketing conversation, particularly for the small to medium-sized business. I find that many of them don't have much of a frame of reference around it. How do you get them started in that vein?
That's a great question, because a lot of times the question we get is, "What is PR?" And it, you know, the simple answer there is, it's a marketing tactic that helps you, you know, get your messages out in a one-to-many kind of conversation. But what I usually like to share is the quote from Bill Gates, and I think every PR person probably has this, you know, plastered in front of their desk, where Bill Gates is quoted as saying, "If I had $2 left to my name, I'd spend one whole dollar on PR. It's that important."
Wow.
And I think when you have someone like Bill Gates who understands and believes in the power of PR, it's a great launching point, because most of us as small business owners or business owners can look and say, "I'd love to be a Bill Gates and love to have $1 billion, you know, to go out and help the world with." So starting with that, public relations is really about developing your messages that relate well to the value you have, but can be easily said again by your audience, that are going to resonate well. And you do that, you can do that through community relations, through media relations. So you're finding different publics to get to basically share your message. And that's what PR is about.
How is social media changing PR?
Rapidly. Is probably the answer to that. You know, everybody's saying, well, what discipline does social, you know, who owns social media within a company? Is it the marketing? Is it PR? Is it my communications? Is it my legal team? You know, who does it happen to be? But I think of all the disciplines, I think PR is probably the most well-suited towards social media currently, simply because it's relating to the public. And that's what public relations is really about. We understand the concept of developing relationships and not just putting an ad out there, not just doing something broadcast-wise, but really trying to create a relationship, develop a relationship that's going to benefit the bottom line, the brand or the bottom line.
And is part of the attraction also just the money side of it? Because it occurs to me that if you wanted to, you could at least get started for very little, if any, money in reaching those publics through some of these vehicles. Or is that also a dangerous direction to take without investing some energy and some resources into some professional help?
One of the key misconceptions is that social media is free. It is not free. The channels to get in, of course, are free, but my effort and my time and the resources, or the person, you know, that you're going to have on staff that's going to be, you know, working on Twitter or working on your Facebook page, that's time invested that they're not putting into another business-focused activity. So that's a cost. I mean, that time is definitely a cost. It certainly is, though, one of the most affordable channels, presents a lot of channels that are, I mean, it just takes signing up and creating an account. So from that perspective, it's a lot less expensive than a billboard ad or putting out a press release over a wire. So it's definitely has an appeal to, gosh, that's so affordable. But companies need to be very careful and not make the mistake that oh, this is free, so why don't we do everything we possibly can? Because you're trading off the resource of somebody's time within your company or a consultant, but you're going to pay for that time somewhere.
But therein lies a big hurdle in a large organization embracing social media is that upper management saying, I just can't get my hand around the ROI on this. How do you begin to address that issue in an organization?
That's a great question, Todd. And ROI is the song that we all try to sing and figure out whether we're in marketing or PR and advertising or even on the C-suite side. And I think what you have to look at and what I share with my clients is if you're not listening online, which is the most basic thing you can do, social media, just go on there and listen. You're potentially missing 80% of the conversations about your brand, product, industry. And that's huge. I mean, to think that here's a really good example. Tropicana, an orange juice product, a consumer product, I think most of us know. You know, you go out and you buy the carton, it's got the little orange with the straw in it. Well, they recently just did a package redesign. In fact, this was last year. And it looked great. I thought it looked great. Well, a small group of consumers online started flaring up about it looks too much like the generic product that my store sells. I want my orange with the peppermint straw back in it. You know, how do we get this? Well, the fury kind of, not fury, but the conversation was getting so heated and so elevated that Tropicana is now shifting back to a blend of their old packaging and new packaging. And you better believe they spent millions of dollars. I mean, packaging is a huge industry, and they spent millions of dollars probably on this, but they weren't listening initially. Of course, then they had to listen because the conversation is happening online. See, what's happened is, and this is interesting, how did we get here? How did social media become this, you know, pervasive part of our conversation?
Yeah.
Well, when's the last time you guys Googled, Todd?
Right before I left.
Yeah. So, and what about you, Todd?
I Google myself all the time.
Excellent. See, how we behave as consumers has really shifted and changed. You know, we used to watch television and get up and turn the channels. Then all of a sudden we got remote controls. Well, now we have DVRs. I don't even have to watch the ads anymore. I can start a show 20 minutes late and zip right through it. You know, radio, in that way, I can listen online or I can listen through Sirius or, you know, some satellite service. Or let's even look at, you know, we would take pictures. I'm sure you guys remember this, not to date you all, but I'm dating myself here. But you would take pictures and you would take your film to the instant Photoshop. You'd wait a week and hope and pray your pictures would come out. Not anymore. I mean, digital cameras will tell you right now, is that a good shot? Do we need to retake it? It's instant. And how we get our news, you can look at the decline of newspapers. People now get their news online. So consumer behavior, we used to be really passive. I could talk to my neighbors, my family, basically where I work, played, and prayed. And that was my sphere of influence. But I can get on Twitter now, put out a tweet how some company lost my luggage when I was, you know, heading overseas somewhere, and rant about it. And people in Kuala Lumpur or Kenosha, Wisconsin can all read that. So my sphere of influence has become greater. So consumers who used to be passive are now more active. And by being active, I can now transition from being a listener online to going out and reading reviews to participating, becoming an author.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is, I mean, that's kind of how we got here. All of a sudden, consumers aren't passive anymore. They're willing to take on your brand in a big way.
Here's the question that I struggle with is, I agree with you. I think marketing used to be a one-way message delivery. Now it's a dialogue. Now it's a conversation. What I don't know, and I'm curious to know what your answer is, did social media cause that, or is that the result of that shift? That's a question that I'm struggling
with. That is such a good question. My without thinking that completely through, my initial reaction is that it caused it, that there's some cause there, because the limitation of the conversation, we were running focus groups before, right? Where we would have, you know, you sit down, you bring in, you know, some of your top purchasers or, you know, your top folks, and you sit down and listen to them. And that would happen, you know, this one-to-many kind of conversation. But they were limited to the time they had in the room. Social media allows everybody in the room to be present, to be active, and that room never shuts down. You know, so I would say that social media, maybe not so much a cause, but it provides the medium for everybody to keep talking about your brand long after you've turned off the computer.
Well, I think that conversation always was always happening. Mm-hmm. Now it's just much more public. And the difference between a company that gets it and one that doesn't is one that relishes and wants to jump in that conversation and one that is afraid of it.
Right.
Well, and I think that's marvelous advice that you're sharing about listening. If you're not going to do anything else, at least get on there and listening. What are some mistakes that you see as you're working with some of your clients, at least initially you can see, they're heading down the wrong road? And what are some, just one or two specific strategies or tactics that you might encourage our listeners to engage in if they're really going to start taking this this social media thing seriously?
Let me start with the tactics, and then we'll go back to the first part of that question there. I think, too, the tactics to really just say, am I going to be listening, responding, or actually engaging? Because those are kind of the three activities you can do. And a really simple thing is to go on Google and sign up for a Google Alert for your company or your product or your industry. And just anytime, you know, the phrase high velocity blog comes up, you know, it's going to send you an alert via email, which is an old way to do it, but it'll send you an alert by email. But then there's things like socialmeter.com, and social meter is meter.com. We'll provide a relatively unsophisticated but a good snapshot of what's being said in the Twitter sphere, you know, what's being said in the blogosphere, what's being said, you know, photo, video about your product, industry, service, whatever you want to, you know, kind of keep tabs on. So a lot of folks, I say, let's just look at what's happening that way. Those are two really easy services you can look at, you know, on your own. If you're making a mistake, if you feel like, oh gosh, what are the, you know, two, three things we need to look out for, kind of red flags, one of the things that's very important is social media is not broadcast media. I want you to think of, I'm at your tweet up tomorrow night here, Todd, and I'm at Fuego Mundo, and I'm just shouting in a corner, I've got a 57 Chevy for sale, I've got a 57 Chevy for sale, you know, and that's all I'm doing. And people in the room kind of start to avoid you, and they start to think like, you know, be sure you avoid that redhead over there. You know, she's got a 50, but everybody will know I have a 57 Chevy for sale. So I've accomplished my goal, but I've abandoned everybody around me because I'm simply shouting out. I'm simply just shouting out a sales message. And while that seems really funny, a lot of people on social media do that. And they use it simply as a means to just broadcast another message out. Now, take a different scenario. You've got someone in a corner who's talking about, wow, I just had this great meal at Fuego Mundo, and it had, you know, this, you know, they're talking about the ingredients, and they're just sitting there talking, only, and today I wore my red sweater, and today I did this, and they're only talking about themselves. Well, those are the people you also avoid at a party, A, because they're a little odd, and second, because you're not quite sure that they know other people are in the room. Right? So, I mean, these are people at the party you want to avoid. Social media, I don't want to, you know, call it a party, but in some ways it is. It's a social interaction. And so you have to be engaging in conversation. You know, when I first meet you, I'm not going to start shouting, I have a 57 Chevy, right, for sale. I'm going to have that conversation a little bit. So I think one of the big mistakes that we initially see companies making is they're doing all broadcast. Have you seen my press release? Have you seen our new sales product? We're going to be at this event. We're going to be at this trade show. Okay, that's great. Would you like to know anything about me? Because I'm sitting here listening to you. And you'll get people to tune you out when all you're doing is broadcast. So you've got to kind of think of it as a conversation. You know, think of it as, you know, the dialogue you're having, you know, right now. It's got to be a back and forth, listening a little, giving a little. But think of yourself, you know, step back and say, am I that person at that party that everybody's avoiding? You know, so I think that's a...
Oh, I think that's great advice. Listen, how can our listeners get in touch with you if they would like some more direction or just learn more about this whole arena? What's the best way for them to get in touch with you and find out more about your organization?
Well, we've got all of our contact information is on our website, which is www.cloudspark.com, which is just like it sounds, cloudspark.com. Or they can also reach us, we're also on Twitter as @CloudSpark. We're certainly open to being reached that way. And if they want to send an email, our email address and phone number, of course, is on our website. One more thing, though, before we go, and this is, I get this a lot from folks in the C-suite. If legal has to review it, you really need to question if it needs to be on social media. That's like bringing your lawyer to the water cooler or bringing your lawyer to the party who stands over you while you're at Fuego Mundo tomorrow night with Todd and his group and saying, no, don't say that. No, oh, no, wait. No, I need you to switch that word. Okay, so if legal's got to review it, really think about if it needs to be on social media.
That sounds like a good metric. Two more questions. We're just about out of time, but I'm always fascinated at what prompts people to name their companies the way that they name them. So CloudSpark, what's that all about? Why did you name it CloudSpark?
That's a margarita conversation. No, I'm just kidding. One of the things I didn't want to be, I didn't want to name my company after myself because it's not about me. So a lot of times in marketing or in PR, you see, you know, Jenny Schmidt and Associates, and I just thought it's not about me. But CloudSpark really comes about. A lot of companies, you know, we tend to stay in the clouds, kind of in the fog of things, but it takes that one spark, you know, that one idea, that one direction, and suddenly, I mean, it's, you know, you're lightning, you know, you're just going in the right direction at a great speed. And we try to be that spark. We try to, you know, we really work hard to understand our clients and provide that one spark or maybe a couple of sparks they need to build their brand and their bottom line.
Well, I like it. I like the name. I like the imagery. And if you go to their website, I think you'll really like the graphics. Before we let you go, Jenny, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show. What we'd like to do is ask each guest, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career, and really, more importantly, what they learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Gosh, that's a tough question, but absolutely, I will do that. You know, at this point in my career, I have multiple mistakes I could point to, but I think one of the ones that provides a lesson that stays with me and hopefully will resonate with the listeners is we had a company that was just incredibly anxious to, let's just get out there and we'll build the product behind it. And every marketing person, I mean, I was very young in my career and thought, well, you know, we could do this. You know, we'll just have the website there and people will play on the website and then they'll come back, you know, once the product's ready for order. And so we launched about 30 days before they had product ready. Huge mistake. Huge mistake to assume that someone will come into your store or onto your website a second time simply because you're not prepared is a tough mistake to learn. And so carrying forward, you know, when a company says to me from a PR perspective, we'd love to be in the Wall Street Journal, I say two things. A, have you read the headlines of the Wall Street Journal? Are you sure you want to be a headline there? But second, are you prepared for the attention you're going to get? Or people say, I want to be on Oprah. I'm like, do you really? Because do you know what that means from a product, you know, from you being able to deliver and deliver well? And so that's the lesson I kind of carry forward. Are you ready for the success you want?
Excellent advice.
Thank you.
In just a moment, we're going to have Todd introduce our next guest. Can you hang out with us for a little while?
Absolutely.
And join that conversation as well?
Absolutely.
Oh, terrific. Todd, who we have up next, man?
We are fortunate to have John Clunan, who's the owner and right brain of Realize LLC. It's a marketing firm based in Duluth. John's built a career creating marketing impact on industries ranging from staffing services to civil engineering to crisis management. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit more about your business.
Well, we position ourselves with small to medium business to try to let them realize some of the marketing impact that I used to bring to large corporations, you know, with, and to also get them to look at other things other than social media, because that is a lot of the time the conversation starter. I want them to bridge the gap between traditional marketing and social media.
An important conversation I want us to have this morning, because I do a lot of that with my business too. Mm-hmm. And social media is the rage, and I fear that too many companies say, this is all I need to do to market myself. And it really is about integrating with more traditional means. So how do you begin to identify what traditional tactical options that you do integrate with? How do you begin that process?
You know, one of the first things I always look at is, do you know who you are? Is, you know, do you really have a brand presence? And we look at, you know, and look at your brand messages and your icons and your brand personality and see if that fits with who you're trying to reach. And then look at some traditional outlets as well as internet outlets to really to create a complete program. And that's more the, it gives you more of a, it gives you a better perspective, and you should bring those two pieces together. As an example, you know, we just recently did a direct mail campaign that guided people to my client's Facebook page, because we're trying to build an online community for them. We're trying to get them to have these conversations, because there's some negative brand negative brand perceptions with their brand that we feel like we can deal with on social media, but we had to get them there first.
I understand that you have quite a bit of experience and probably some pretty strong opinions around building community in general. Can you tell us more about that aspect of your practice?
Yeah, absolutely. you know, what we feel like the conversations that you're hearing on social media, like you said earlier, Todd, have been happening forever. They're just in different channels, and the channels are bigger and more public. A lot of the, we deal, again, a lot with small to medium business, so who don't have any presence in their own community, in region, you know, in their region. So we encourage them to do things like events. You know, we do a lot of event marketing, creating events where they invite their clients and prospects and the people in their community to actually meet them and to benefit from their expertise. And then that gets extended into their social media presence. It gets extended onto their website. And it also gives them content that they can push so that people learn about what they do.
I love how you talked about events. I mean, it's the sole reason that we're doing this tweet up tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. It benefits so many different people. I mean, it helps me out, frankly, mm-hmm. because I become known as a connector. And I'm bringing people together. It helps my client, because I'm driving a lot of traffic mm-hmm. to the restaurant. But it just warms my heart when I'm sitting there and I'm observing people in this session and I see new people meeting and connecting. Mm-hmm. People that said, "Oh my gosh, I've been following you on Twitter for a year and now we're finally meeting." It's money, you know, and it just helps so many people. So I love that you mentioned events. I think it's a great way mm-hmm. and a very critical part of, this process.
And with events, that's, you know, the thing that I get out of events too is we like to let people benefit from our expertise without paying for it at some level. You know, we're doing a series called Marketing and Margaritas, where literally, you know, I'll get up there and answer, you know, we'll get up there, we'll do a short presentation about a particular marketing topic and answer questions for our clients and prospects. I do it in conjunction with a couple other agencies, too. I usually invite another agency as a guest. And we'll sit up there and say, you know what, if this is what you're doing now, maybe you should consider these things. And I know that it... A lot of those people end up in my online community. They end up reading my blog. They follow us on Facebook. They follow us on Twitter. So, and we've built a client base from that in the last, you know, eight to 9 months.
Marketing and Margaritas. Apparently, that's where Jenny created her company name.
Well, there's a real theme here. You got the 2-for-1 sangrias. I mean, you sold me. I'm in your community. You just show me where to sign up. You know, I'd love it. So, what do you do once you've got the community? What do you do with them once you got them?
You know, Jenny alluded to this. It's about the conversation. It's learning about them, but also giving them the opportunity to have conversations with you about your brand. One of the things, a great example of that is Zappos Shoes, where they've created a Twitter page that is all the responses to negative comments about their brand. You can go out there, you can see this, you can read how they deal with that. And it only adds to their legendary customer service. And you can do things like, you do things like that, and that you're having a conversation. You're allowing people to comment, positive or negative, and being able to participate in that conversation.
Stone, you know, seeing a common theme in our shows that Zappos keeps coming up?
Well, they do keep coming up, and I think it's a well-deserved, well-earned reputation that they have. And among other things, one of the characteristics that I keep seeing in these organizations that are doing it well is transparency. And what a perfect model of transparency that you're describing. They're actually letting you see. This is what people are saying negative about us, and here's how we're responding to it.
It's interesting because I had a pretty nasty negative comment appear on my Facebook fan page not too long ago, and my father follows my Facebook page pretty closely, and all of a sudden he's on the phone going, "John, you've got this horrible comment on your Facebook page. You need to delete it." And I said, "No, what I need to do is address it with this person in that forum, so that they see that we understand that there's an issue here. And it's going to, you know, and this is how we feel it should be addressed." And, you know, granted, it was littered with horrible cuss words and all kinds of things. So I, you know, but it was a good, and I have that person still today as a client. So there's value in having those conversations, and the transparency is imperative. You know, your brand has to be real and genuine, and it has to show through your social media conversations and within your online community.
And one of the best ways to advance that brand is to engage when you get negative criticism. You know, Jenny talked about the value of listening, and when you listen, and when you see, when you monitor the chatter and you hear something negative and you address it, it's the best opportunity you have, I believe, mm-hmm. to build a long-term loyal customer.
Absolutely. It's imperative. that you have the and people will talk amongst themselves either on or offline saying, you know, I had this issue with Realize LLC and I posted it on his Facebook page. I was pretty, and they might actually say, I was pretty nasty about it. And they responded quickly and professionally, and I'm still a client of theirs. And that's the great, you know, if I can have that experience, I'll do that every day. I'll let you come on my Facebook page and say nasty things about me all day long.
It's encouraging to see the other guests nodding her head up and down. You know, sometimes one guest will say something and the other one's like rolling their eyes. But well, Jenny's over there like, hey, this guy knows what he's talking about.
Sometimes we try to spur those little.
Oh, yeah, little sometimes little. That's fun as well. So it occurs to me that it can be, if not given the proper direction, a long, hard road in building community. You know, getting it off the ground, some tactics, some ideas, some recommendations on just getting a community going, and maybe even some ideas on a platform, a technology that will really facilitate that?
You know, I'm with Jenny on don't get yourself tied to a technology. You've got this, your community needs to be built of people who are actually part of your audience, so don't try to reach everybody all at once. You have, but technology, you know, if you are on social media and you have get an aggregator of some kind. I use TweetDeck largely. It allows you to see your Facebook status updates, Twitter mentions, your direct messages, and a few other things. And also an aggregator and then a stats package. Socialmeters.com is a good one. I actually purchased TM Social Buzz, which is phenomenal. It gives you, you can graph all your data 15 ways to Sunday. But to get started, really, it's really about doing both on and online offline activities. Do an event. Do direct mail that may bring people to your Facebook page. Have a really good website that's connected to all your social media. A lot of the times, I'll see people who have. They have this social media presence, and you can't get to their site, which to me, you're missing a connection. Connect it all together. The value of each individual channel is multiplied, you know, exponentially by connecting them all to each other.
What is your opinion on a tool like Ping, where you can go to one place, type in a message, and hit enter, and it sends something to all these different tools?
You must have noticed my tweets when I was tweeting about this show. I use Ping almost exclusively to send things out. In fact, I 15 minutes before I showed up here, I pinged that we're going on air in 30 minutes. So, and if you, as long as you understand what you're saying. And to whom, a tool like that is invaluable. And you can customize Ping to actually message different groups. And you should use that customization. You shouldn't message everybody all the time with the same message. It's not the same group. You know, the people who are on my personal Facebook page should get a different message that are fans of than those who are fans of my company. You know, my Twitter followers may get a different message as well.
Let's talk about conversion for a moment. I've got a few questions around conversion. My first is, should you take a proactive stance and try to, okay, woo, we got one. He's in our community and he looks like a live one. Should you take some proactive steps to try to convert them to the next step in your sophisticated maze? Or is it better to just sort of let that relationship develop and let it bubble up and then take your opportunity to continue to serve them when it's ripe, when it's proper, or is there a mix of both of those strategies?
I think it's a mix of both. If you've got somebody you know is in your they're your lightning rod client, you might target the information you're pushing, the content that you're putting to attract them. But I don't generally believe in reaching out to them directly. You know, that's what your salespeople are for at some level. But give them information that will make them come to you. You know, it's a pull strategy more than a push, in my mind.
Well, I'll tell you why I ask. I have seen and I have witnessed getting into, I guess, what you would call a community. Mm-hmm. And it's just as soon as they found out who I was and where I was, which I make reasonably easy to find out because I've got stuff I'm trying to sell too, and I get hammered with this series of autoresponder emails. And it's like any initial respect and pull that they might have initially gotten with me, they've lost it when they hit me with four emails in 3 days. And so, yeah.
And Twitter, you know, that's common as dirt on Twitter. You'll start following somebody on Twitter because you feel like they may have something valuable to say. And then you get 50 tweets a day, some of which repeat. Some of people have these tweet loops, literally. And you'll get the you can follow them. It's fascinating. But you won't follow that person. That person won't stay in your community long. And the other people in your community will be offended by that group, because one thing about creating communities is if we're all in the same community, I can see what Jenny is. You know, Jenny can post to my pages and in my community, and you guys can see that. And it's all about creating conversations around your brand, and that people will value. It's not, I don't want to read 50 ads about your marketing company. I want to hear what you're doing because I may want to attend something. And I, you know, so those, it's not a push as much as a pull, because you'll stop following those people.
Well, I know I certainly do. Can you walk us through an example? We certainly wouldn't ask you to necessarily share a specific client name, but can you walk us through an example of an organization that came to you sort of at point A, mm-hmm. and through some of these strategies and through what you guys are learning about the marketplace, you got them to point B, and maybe now they're really in good shape for hitting point C?
Absolutely. And this goes back. Realize is actually an older company that has just started doing business as its own self. I've been doing consulting here since the early 2000s, or late 90s, actually. And in 2003, we did a brand study for a crisis management firm. We looked at who they were and who they wanted to be and created a brand presence for them. They started with nothing. Two people, no crisis response staff. And we built their brand for them. We then went ahead and built their website, collateral materials, and did some. We're doing events with them in their target market. Crisis management is largely sold to HR. So we looked at groups like EPA and EHR.com and Human Resources Magazine, and we did event marketing there. We did direct mail to those targets. We did some direct email, though I don't advocate that anymore, but back, you know, in the early 2000s, I did. We did some direct email, and we've created this community, and now they're getting ready. We're just starting our social media campaign with them, inviting those people to see what real crisis response is, because it's a small industry. There's only three or four companies that do it in any, but the other companies will tell you, this is the way you do it. Well, it's undergoing a sea change. So we're using social media to communicate that sea change to their target market and to their current clients and prospects. They're also using Twitter in an innovative way. All their crisis network people are required to be there now. And if there is a crisis, what better way to broadcast, okay, we need 50 people in Louisville, Kentucky to help, you know, to help with some horrible event, like a workplace shooting or something like that, to help these people deal with this thing. You know, so they tweet it, and their network gets it and responds almost immediately.
I know you spent most of or much of your earlier career in marketing professional services. You obviously have some genuine expertise in that arena. Everything we've talked about this morning, both with our first guest and now with you, does it really lend itself more to marketing professional services, or is there some genuine application for the hard goods arena, or whatever you call the other stuff that we don't know anything about, Todd?
I think product marketing has a...
Product marketing. That's what I was looking for.
You know, I think product... You know, we have a couple products in our portfolio, and I think product has an opportunity there as well, especially commodity product, because commodity product, because you can't differentiate on the actual product, you're differentiating purely on brand. So if your brand is out there and creating a community around your brand, that's people will take, it might take the decision process from that very limited decision commodity process up into a more, they may think it out a little more. They may think, you know, I may not want to change from this soap because I read on their blog about their practices on how they get these ingredients. You know, it's all, it may all be environmentally friendly or something like that. So you might end up buying this commodity rather than that one.
I think when you're selling products, you succeed because if you're going to compete with a lot of other companies selling
mm-hmm.
soap,
mm-hmm.
And so then it comes down to price and all that. I think where a product can benefit from social media is in telling that story and building the experience around using that soap, for mm-hmm. instance. So I think that's I think that's how product marketing benefits from.
Well, I'm glad I asked because I really never thought about it from that perspective because I'm just have been so immersed in the professional services arena for so long. But now that I hear you talk about it, to me it's almost like I could build a case for it being even more important for the product company.
Well, let's use the Zappos example again. They're selling shoes,
right?
You know, but they're building a whole different experience than buying shoes online. You know, you can go any number of sources and find those kind of products online. But they've built a different kind of experience around it.
And I think the online model initially, and I think a lot of the online vendors have missed that opportunity because online is almost always about price.
Mm.
And when you look at, the standard marketing mix, price, being a discounter is only one market position you can take. Now, it's been the most common market position online, but I think with Zappos, I'm not sure about their pricing model, but they've built it, they've gone a completely different direction. They've gone customer service. And a lot of these brick and mortar companies that have taken that on have decided their brands don't suit price. You look at like an H&R Block. H&R Block does wonderful things on social media. They created a character to bring some humanity to their social media, the Truman Green character. That appears in a lot of their viral advertising. It's, they have Truman Green on video. There's a Truman Green channel on YouTube. And there's the place where you can actually ask Truman questions about personal budgeting.
Oh, that's cool.
And that sort of brand position, I think, is where people are starting to see online more. Is it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be the lowest price vendor online, and you're likely not to be. Because for every big company that has a product, there's 10,000 little companies who might sell the same product. It might not be as good, but it's certainly cheaper.
That's great. Hey, John, when you walked in the studio, you were dressed such that I think you're probably a big advocate for high velocity. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Well, tell this listening audience what he was wearing when he walked in.
I'll let John tell the story.
Well, I showed up today on a very, very fast motorcycle. I have a long history as a hobbyist motorcycle racer. I've done some club racing. I raced pro-ams back in the early 90s. I like to go fast, anything fast, bikes, cars, you name it. It's fast. So when I saw high-velocity radio, I thought it was only apropos that I was here.
Outstanding. Well, our agent will be contacting you so we can put sponsor decals on your bike.
Absolutely.
And on your outfit. And I think Stone wants to know where your vendor to get all that cool.
Well, I think your instincts were right on track. It was absolutely appropriate to have you on the show. It's been a delight visiting with you, and I hope you'll come back sometime.
Absolutely.
Before we let you go, you heard us do this a little bit earlier. A couple of things. One, I want to make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you. What's the best way for them to contact you?
Really, our website, realizellc.com. You can connect to us through all of our social media channels via realizellc.com, or you can get us by Google Voice, 678-551-2MKT, 2Market.
Terrific. Well, thanks. And, of course, we'd like very much, if we could, to ask you to share a mistake that you made at some point in your career and what you learned from it.
Yeah, absolutely. I was a marketing director for a staffing firm, and they they did one very common thing, and this is sort of related to what Jenny was talking about, is we would sell it and then build it, and don't go out there and advertise that you've got it if you can't deliver it, because this company's brand was well known for doing a lot of very high-level specific things. Well, it very quickly turned into their brand became known for advertising a lot of high-level specific things that they never were able to deliver.
I think that is excellent advice. Simple, straightforward, but so important. And I think it's an easy trap to fall into, particularly in an arena where you can pull that off in the short term. In the professional services arena, I know you can pull that off in the short term. What a great show. This has been a lot of fun, hasn't it, Todd?
It's been a great one.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton, Todd Schnick, Jenny Schmidt, John Clunan, Lee Cantor, and the entire Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.